The philosopher poet John Donoghue once said, "Everyone is an artist, because one way or another, they're making their own world." Whether you believe that's true of you or me, it is the power of craftsmen and women. They imagine and make practical and beautiful things to shelter us, keep us warm, and put food on our table. A culture of craft is buried deep in Donegal's landscape, and for generations, this harsh, beautiful place has made crafts both necessary and unique. I'm Mary Brophy, and in this series, Law of Yeinte, I'm going in search of these once commonplace handmade traditions to tell the story of the Donegal men and women who practice them today.
Now, when I was growing up, my grandmother, she was the expert dyer in the house. That art has sadly gone away, you know, in a big way. There are not too many people fit to do that anymore.
You know, it's a craft, it's using your hands, you're actually creating something, you're not sitting behind a desk. And yeah, I think it's really important to keep it going and keep the craft going.
Well, it's my son, it's my wife, it's my brother, it's my sister. We're all employed. Like everything, literally everything that I have is because of Donegal Tweed.
Towards the end of the 18th century, in one year alone, it's said over 6,000 flax wheels and 60 looms were sent out to homes across Donegal as payment to spinners working in a then thriving linen industry. But flax wheels could also spin wool yarn. And in the late 1800s, those wheels became the foundation of an incredible revival of the distinctive Donegal tweed. A monthly fair in Ardrath became an international trading post, with hand-woven cloth sold to Paris and New York fashion houses for high prices. Alongside machine manufacturing, hand-weaving continues an ancient Donegal tradition.
I grew up in a house where there was two looms, there were spinners. My grandmother was a spinner and my father was the main weaver. His father would have wove before that, and they lived in a place called Glendone, which is 4 miles out of Ardrath on the Donegal Road, a lovely little hidden glen, and they would have been a family of producing tweed.
Like so many others here, Colm Sweeney of the Ardrath Heritage Centre comes from a long line of spinners and weavers. In cottages speckled across the landscape, enormous quantities of tweed were produced. And learning to use this land of green moss, ink blackberry and yellow whin to dye the wool was a skill passed from old to young.
Winter time was more of a time for weaving. So the girls would be all sitting around spinning and the men would be carding the wool, breaking down the wool.
Why was there such a gender divide between the weaving and the spinning?
It was just the same thing. If you were a lady at the time growing up, you were a carder or a spinner, you were taught that. I had photographs here of my aunt and of my grandmother spinning the tweed there. Very rare to see a man using a spinning wheel in them days. Now, my father used to say, his grandmother used to say, you can't make Donegal tweed unless you know everything about it from the start to the finish. So they would have started as kids gathering the crottle of the rocks, the lynching. That's where they would start, and then they would be learnt then how to do the drop spindle, and they'd be learnt how to spin. Everybody in the house knew how to do it, but only certain people were allowed to do it. And as your question going back, it was mainly ladies. And if you look up photographs of all spinners and you get one of a man spinning, I can tell you it'll be a very rare one.
Weaving was a significant winter cash crop for families, and when the Congested Districts Board was set up by the British government to lessen poverty along the west coast, they saw this beautiful cloth had much more potential.
The whole county had it, but we needed a place to sell it. So these market towns were set up. It was the first of every month here, and they kind of patented that, and the Congested District Board to have that. And their label meant that you had a good product. And my father always said, it wouldn't make you rich, but you'd have a jingle in your pocket.
And by the 1920s, like, this was an international market,
oh,
wasn't
it? Was big. This was, yeah, it was. They were shipping it all over the world. There were Donegal tweed, which there were a lot. The two world wars demanded a lot of tweed. That was great time for it. Between them, there was a lull, but that lull was still big for Donegal tweed, if you get me, you know.
In the 1920s, one pioneering Ardrath producer, James Molloy, packed a suitcase of samples and travelled to America, where he established a direct export market for his knits and tweeds in New York City. His descendants, father and son Sean and Kieran Molloy, continue to produce tweed in a new century. Sean unfolds the backdrop of the family tradition.
it was a business that they carried on. It was worth their while doing it. Okay, it financed trips over and back to America on a number of occasions. They would have had the yarn spun locally and then woven by local weavers, and the business just developed from there.
And your father then kind of took that same approach to the world. Am I right? He went out to Asia, Tokyo, that part of the world.
Well, he initially would have gone to America and Canada and built up a business there. And then I think it was about 1969, he went to Tokyo for the first time and established a reasonable size business with the Japanese market, selling them tweeds. And yeah, that was very successful.
And what made him go there? Like, what drew him there?
Well, having been in America and having talked to his contacts there, they suggested that, okay, it might be something that you would like to look at. It could be an opening market that you could go and explore. And he duly did.
And was that unusual at the time,
yes,
like in this part of the country?
Yeah, it was very unusual. They were probably the very first to export Donegal tweed to Japan.
In 2007, recession hit, and Malloy's, like so many other family businesses, retracted. But Sean saw an opening, and so Malloy & Sons was born.
In 2011, myself and my son Kieran, we decided that we were going to do our own thing. That at that stage, the Donegal Tweed end of the business had taken something of a backseat, and we felt that there was more of a market than was being exploited. So we started, and we've been doing our own thing since. I am one of the few people in the world that can genuinely say that I produce Donegal Tweed. I have the skill, I have the knowledge, I have the capabilities, and I said, yeah, this needs to be pushed a bit further, so that's what we'll do.
So do I get a sense from you that it was more than needs must? It was about sustaining something?
Yes, of course it was. Like, there was a huge history, heritage there, and had I decided at that stage that I was going to go and work on computers or something else, well, an awful lot of skill and knowledge would have been lost. So I decided that I wasn't going to let that happen.
Was it a gamble? Was this going to be a huge risk in
yes,
terms of
absolutely.
Outlay?
Yes.
What did that mean?
You took everything you had and you put it into it. And you worked it day and night to make it work. You're still doing it, but it does work.
As a modern manufacturer, Malloy & Sons produce cloth by machine to the volumes they need. But in a small pocket of Donegal, one business produces all of its tweed by hand on traditional looms. Studio Donegal is in Kilcar.
My aim with Studio Donegal is to make it the hallmark of Irish hand-woven tweed.
Owner Tristan Donaghy.
We're not here for the short term. We're here, hopefully, for the long term. We've been here for 40 years. We're celebrating our 40th birthday this July. And hopefully, well, if I say generations, that might be too much to hope for. You know, it'll go on as long as somebody wants to run it.
The complete process takes place in this one building, from carding to spinning, dyeing to weaving. The sign says it, hand weaving this way.
Yes. So this is where the packing is. This is burning, and then this is the weaving here. Okay.
There you go. Oh wow.
So
how many looms do you have here? Six, is there?
We have five looms
five,
here.
Five. Yes.
We have three here working and fourth on this side, and then we have a huge loom down here on which we can weave king and queen size blankets. But what you have with the loom is you have a frame, okay? And in the frame then you have a back beam which is held. The back beam holds the warp, which is what the weaver is going to weave cloth from. Once the warp is knotted in, it's going to be drawn through these shafts, okay? So these shafts.
So the warp is the vertical thread.
The vertical threads, yes.
And it's been tied in at both ends.
Yes. So there's a piece that has just been finished, okay? So we've got a change of colour now because we're changing, right? So the pattern is the same, but the colours are different.
So when you change the colour here,
yes.
they're individually tied together then.
That's right, yes.
And how old are these weaves?
Well, they're timber, so we're able to keep replacing parts as needed. But I would estimate, if you looked at the cast gears on the side of them, gears have been cut for over 150 years. In fact, these are cast gears, would imply that they're originally probably about 200 years old.
But like a ship, they've probably changed by the time you get to the next port. You
know, it's something which is constantly evolving.
Setting a loom is painstaking and can take half a day, carefully tying in hundreds of lengths of wool. Horizontal threads, the weft, are passed through the vertical warp by means of a shuttle. Yet despite this, or perhaps because of it, people are drawn to this creative craft.
Madeline came to train to weave with us. This loom has been working, Madeline, since September?
Yep,
thanks. So Madeline is knotting in there at the moment.
Madeline Fairbairn.
Madeline, what made you want to come into it?
I suppose it's a craft, it's using your hands, you're actually creating something, you're not sitting behind a desk. I don't know, for me that's just not something I want to do. And yeah, I think it's really important to keep it going and keep the craft going, and it's multi-sensory, and a musical background as well, and there's something very percussive and instrumental about the looms, and there's a total rhythm, and because all four of us are different, we all weave in a different way and we all have different rhythms, and you know, when the four of them are going, it's absolutely amazing to hear it, just rhythms, you know, phasing in and out, and that in itself just, you know, it puts you into a state of calm and peace, and I don't know, yeah, kind of the perfect environment to be working in. There is definitely, I think, with my generation, a resurgence in interest in craft. And not a lot of people go down it because it's hard to make money, it's hard to make a living, and obviously it requires a lot of training, but I think people are slowly kind of beginning to be drawn back to craft and working with their hands. Living in the disposable world that we're living in at the moment, it's scaring people. Climate change, you know, the planet is kind of falling apart, so hopefully we're going to be thinking a lot more about how we live our lives and what we choose to buy, and rather than buying something for 2 euro and then throwing it away, you know, we're investing in pieces that mean something and there's a story behind them.
A distinctive quality of Donegal tweed is its soft, sophisticated colour palette. The cloth made here is like a tactile mirror of the very landscape itself, as Colm Sweeney explains.
The sheep and the dyes all came from the mountains. Now, my ancestors, my grandfather and great-grandfather, would have reared the sheep, they would have clipped the sheep, and then they would have gathered the local dyes, the crottles, the lynchings, all the colours, the greys, the greens and the browns. You have black wool, white wool, and then you have a grey if you mix the two of them together. Then you'd have your browns coming from your lynchings, and if you mix that with white wool, you end up with a nice kind of a skin colour. Then if you take the trees, you have alder, beautiful green dye, and then you have moss, which grows in the fields, and you boil it. That's the process. You boil the lynchings, you boil the dyes, and you boil them at different temperatures to get different colours. And once you have all the colours got, then you let them dry, and then you card them, which is another process of mixing them. It's just like an artist with a palette. You take your colours, and then you weave them into your cloth, spin them and weave them. So you end up with a living fabric that comes from the earth. Now, when I was growing up, my grandmother, she was the expert dyer in the house. That art has sadly gone away, you know, in a big way. There are not too many people fit to do that anymore.
What makes Donegal tweed unique is the fact that it has a flex of colour in it, okay?
Sean Malloy.
And that there gives a fabric its character.
And that's known as the Donegal fleck,
yes,
is that it?
The yarn is made up of two basic components, okay? You've got the main structure of the yarn, the base of the yarn, okay? And in order to achieve even a grey colour, we don't just take wool fibre and dye it grey. You take white, you take black, you take maybe a bit of blue, you blend them together in a certain proportion, same as a cake recipe, and you end up with a grey yarn, okay? So that there's the base established. You then have to see what you want to do in terms of making it with a Donegal character, and you can go any number of ways. You can add complementary spots of colour, you can do contrasting spots of colour, or a combination of both, and just depends on what takes your fancy on any given day. You'll decide that you want to do something different, and you'll develop a yarn.
And on any given day, like, what's the kind of things that inspires you to create something?
Well, we have an established range at this stage, and you'll just think to yourself, okay, we're lacking something here, we need something else. You may have seen something that inspires you. Rocks on the beach to plants, it just doesn't matter. You get your inspiration where it comes from. I look at what nature has in terms of a palette or how it puts things together, and yes, it does inspire. And yeah, that's a nice combination there. We could do something like that there. There's times when you improve upon it, and there's times that you fail to live up to its capabilities. But, you know, you take the inspiration as I say where you get it.
That inspiration is a legacy Sean's inherited. On the workshop floor, we comb through swatches from his current collection and some that stretch back decades.
Okay, so this is basically a selection of some of the patterns that we show people. They're various weights, weaves, colours, combinations of yarns aimed at different end uses, whether it's gents' jackets or ladies' coats or whatever the people themselves decide, because like we may weave a cloth that will have a specific intention in my mind, but the customer can turn around and use it for something completely different, and they often do.
So in the 21st century, you still have your suitcase,
yeah,
that is packed with your material,
yes,
exactly like your granddad would have done,
yes,
and
yeah,
his brother and your father done before him. So are these older,
yeah,
swatches now?
Yeah.
I mean, this is like a little library of your heritage really here,
yeah,
isn't it?
Absolutely. Okay, so this would be some of the original swatches that would have been done. And again, that's very much like what you were looking at in next door. And that's not unlike what you're looking at weaving at the moment.
Yeah.
Okay, so like things change, but they also stay the same. And what you're basically doing, you're taking something very old and adapting it.
And when, okay, you say original now, you mean original to 2011?
No, no.
This is going back.
This is going back to the early 60s.
Really? Yeah. And you can actually, do you know, even as you opened it up, when we look at the very contemporary colours and designs here that are, you know, you can respond to it how you see them today. This almost looks from the 60s. It's much more psychedelic in terms of the mixes and those bright greens. And, you know, it's like a Beatles soundtrack,
yeah,
here in front,
yeah,
of us.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Very similar weight of fabric, so again things change, but again you're still carrying on very much in the same tradition.
I think my mum had a suit in something like that. Actually this is really nostalgic, because just in these little swatches you're seeing almost like, you know, social history being told from,
yeah,
from fashion as well. It's beautiful.
I would also have not actually swatches, but I would have records for the technical details for the fabrics going back to say 1909, and I can reference those,
yes,
in what we're doing at the moment. And while I don't have the swatch, I have enough that I can picture what that particular fabric is like, mm, and appreciate what the guys were able to do back then.
And how do you then interpret that from what was hand weaving into a mechanical process?
It's the exact same thing.
Really?
There's absolutely no difference whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any of these fabrics here that were all woven on hand looms, we can do all of them downstairs.
Really? That's great. Yeah. So nothing gets lost in translation?
Absolutely nothing.
Yeah, great.
Nothing.
That is like a little social history now between two pieces of cardboard. It's lovely. Yeah, it's great.
Thanks.
Back in Studio Donegal with Tristan Donaghy and weaver Tony Breslin, I get my first lesson on the loom.
Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's it.
Now, where's the shuttle? Tell me, how does... So this has been set up and now
The thread is in there. When I pull down on that there, that shifts the shuttle over to that side,
to the left, yeah.
And then when
you
pull
the
back,
other direction, it goes, brings
it goes
it to
back
the right.
To the back to the right. So that's and
what are you doing with your feet?
I'm changing. See, this is where the design is. See, so
okay.
the design is out there. So I change the minute the shuttle goes out. I change my feet, and I hit it. You look, and that
binds it together.
Okay. My time here has left me with a real appreciation for the craft and tradition Studio Donegal is preserving. Tony and Tristan make this sound easy, but mastering the counter-rhythms of pedal work and hand shuttle takes practice. In these musicians' hands, it's an art.
Yeah, you would have to tramp down on that now and just... And then you have to hold that. You see, there's a few things you have to do.
Wow.
Together.
Okay. That's the lever.
Yes.
So pull the lever down. Okay.
That's it.
And it went through to the other side.
And you can see that it's left a weft shot behind us. Okay. You're going to now throw the shuttle back again. So pull the other one. That's it. Yep. And you've almost got it in. Okay.
And do you see that the way that the red thread is not as tight down as the other ones? Is that because I'm not pulling?
Because we haven't beaten it up quite as hard.
I'm not pulling the sleigh back as tight as it should be.
It comes down to just hitting it at the same with the same bump all the time. So in other words, if you put your hand there for a moment, if I just want to keep doing that and sort of that, okay,
yeah. So I haven't ruined your...
Oh, no, no.
Your
and
design.
No. And, I mean, sometimes there are mistakes made and you have to go back and, unpick a little bit. And then you, every so often you'll make a mistake and you put in the wrong colour and you're going, oh, I've got to go back and take that out.
Do you have to be physically fit to be doing this, then? I mean, is there constant, at least upper arm strength as well as...
Oh, yeah. An advantage of being in good shape, you know.
Weaver John Hina.
And it keeps you in shape.
It does, sure does.
And how long does it take you to do 35 metres?
8 hours. You make about 4 metres an hour.
Really?
No problem.
Really? 4 metres
That's
an
for a pension or two. It'd be 35 metres on that one there in Madeline's. There's 35 metres on this. There's probably 70 and there were 70 and 20s in the end. We never passed 90, just to make it comfortable for the weaver.
Right.
Because if you go over that, the tension, you need extra weight, you need extra tension, it's going to make it that even more difficult, you know.
Just a few years into production, Malloy & Sons featured on the luxury design website Nowness, which introduced their tweed to a new international market of fashion directors.
You get into conversation with somebody and they'll know somebody else and they like the story and they come and do piece about it, and before you know it, it appears on the Nowness website.
And what kind of impact did that have?
It did expose us to a huge audience in terms of the design world. We can go into an office and people there will remark, yes, we've seen that particular video.
Has the internet side of things, has that made the difference to Donegal Tweed?
It has made business easier, communications much easier. We can have a discussion in the morning with somebody in Tokyo, we can have a discussion in the evening with somebody in New York, we can tie things together on a global basis, and that makes the whole business easier.
But has it made the craft viable in the sense that you now can access those, get exposed to those markets without having to physically fill your suitcase and go to Tokyo?
That's the only way to do it.
Still?
Absolutely. If you didn't fill your suitcase and go to New York, go to Berlin, go to Tokyo, there wouldn't be a business.
That's really encouraging because it's still about the tactileness. It's still about that kind of feel it.
It's about looking somebody in the eye and handing them a piece of fabric. And as you say, it's the tactile element of it. They have to get the cloth and they have to scrunch it up and they have to feel it and appreciate what's gone into it.
Did the gamble pay off? Do you feel it's been worth it?
I'm not on the dole. Well, it's my son, it's my wife, it's my brother, it's my sister. We're all employed. Mm. Like everything, literally everything that I have is because of Donegal Tweed. It's nice at the end of the day to look back behind you and say, well, yeah, that's what we did today. We've achieved something. We've actually physically created something. We've taken raw material, raw elements, put them together, and now we've got something that we can be proud of.
What do you think it is about tweed that draws people to it?
I think there's one thing about tweed. If we only know the story of tweed, tweed is us. We are a part of tweed. It's not that that it comes and goes. It's always there, like looking at us. It's there in the mountain. And when we wear it, people notice that you wear Donegal tweed. Just, you feel a part of the landscape when you wear Donegal tweed.
Law of Ainta is an IWR media production for Highland Radio, written and presented by Mary Brophy and produced by Neil Boyle. Funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with a television licence fee.